Welcome to Come to the Brink. I'm Zoe Flowers, and this is a space for those of us navigating profound life changes like loss, trauma, caregiving, and transformation. It's about what happens when everything you thought was solid crumbles beneath you and you're forced to rebuild. If you've ever felt like you're standing on the brink, this is the space for you. Welcome. So today is going to be a really exciting episode. I'm going to be talking with folks that I've been working with for quite a while now, about 5 years. So my guests today are Fiona Oliphant and Cassie Whitebread. And they are, so Fiona is one of the co-founders of Healing Equity United, and Cassie is one of the crucial members of the team. And so the organization is dedicated to centering those living at the margins by valuing lived experiences, amplifying marginalized voices, and realigning power within institutions and communities. So Fiona brings decades of experience as a legal advocate, executive director, public speaker, and Jamaican American mother with an unshakable belief that collectively we can end violence and oppression. Cassie is a radical educator, coach, and community builder, a former teacher turned consultant who helps organizations operationalize equity through honesty, care, and connection. She believes that transformation starts with courageous conversations and collective action. So Jess Aiden Lee is not in the conversation with us today, but she is one of the co-founders of Healing Equity United. And I'm sure she's here with us in spirit as she's doing other things today. So their recent article, Preparing for the Future Means Feeling Now, is a call to arms for the heart, a reminder that our numbness is not neutrality, and that the only way through the dystopia we're living in is to feel our way to the other side. So yeah, let's get started. Welcome, y'all. So before we talk about the article, I want to start with your personal landscape. So for you, Cassie, what actually inspired you to get into this work?
Yeah, thank you so much, Zoe. We're so excited to be here with you today. Thank you for having us on. I think what brought me to this work, as you mentioned in the introduction, I started my career out as an educator. I really enjoyed my time in the classroom, but very quickly got burnt out from the work. And so I pivoted and moved into the nonprofit sector. And in my time within the nonprofit sector, I served as coordinator, manager, director, and experienced a lot of harm within predominantly white nonprofits. Everything from basic microaggressions to some very blatant racism. And my own experiences, I think, are what brought me into wanting to serve within the consultant role in supporting organizations and figuring out where their blind spots are, where their spots of growth can be in order to support folks from marginalized backgrounds like myself, where I would have really appreciated having that external support while I was struggling within those organizations.
And what about you, Fiona?
Yeah, as you know, I've worked in the anti-domestic violence sexual assault space for decades. And in the varied roles that I held, I found that as I advanced in my career, people asked me to assist them in their sort of mainstream organizations to identify barriers that survivors from marginalized communities face, right? And I didn't have any free time. And so that became unsustainable. And so I joined Jess and we created Healing Equity United because we saw that in our day-to-day work, we were already doing this work. We were already identifying how systemic oppression shows up in the nonprofit space. We were already identifying how to engage and support the creation of spaces that cultivate belonging, that uplift cultural humility. And so when we created Healing Equity United, we wanted to really support other nonprofit organizations and individuals to do the same, to go on that journey. It's not a bad journey. It's not an evil journey. It's not a quote unquote hard journey, but it is a challenging and nuanced journey. And that's what brought me to this space today.
Yeah. And so where did you all come up with this notion of feeling as a form of resistance? I think one of the impetuses for this article came from some of our recent work. In 2025, we are in the thick of a polycrisis. There's a lot happening. And one of the things that we've been focusing on with our clients, the individuals and the organizations that we've been working with, is taking time to do that internal reflection and recognizing how we're processing what we're all going through. One of the foundations that we approach our work on is that in order for us to elicit sustainable organizational or cultural change, it requires individuals to buy into that and to do their own internal work as well. And one of the things that we often come back to and have come back to again and again in this wild year of 2025 that we've had so far is that hurt people hurt people. And when we ignore our feelings, ignore the harms, the triggers, the traumas that we've experienced, and push them under the rug and try to move forward. Though the reactions that we might be having to those experiences might come up in unexpected or unintentional ways later on, and therefore impact those that we're in space with. And so we've really been trying to almost get back to basics with a lot of our clients around what does it mean to communicate directly and clearly and kindly and consistently, and to bring a little bit more of what we're feeling and how we're feeling something in our bodies, in order to bring our full selves to conversations.
Yeah. So I'm curious about how that is being received, because you all know we've worked together. You know, this is something that has been like, I've been trying to figure out how to do that for so long. So what's the reaction been? And do you find people are more open to these conversations because of the current climate? What are y'all finding?
You know, it varies. I'll be honest, it varies. So there is the bucket of people who sincerely want to continue to advance in this regard, and they are open to it, right? And then they start feeling things that they haven't felt or haven't explored in a really long time. And like a hot potato, they can't drop it fast enough, right? Then there's this bucket of people that are really open to that internal work and processing and need additional support to identify when they are reacting from a space of pain and hurt and trauma versus creating that, essential pause and processing and then responding to work more, collaboratively with those that they're in space with. And then there is that bucket of folks that say, I want a deliverable, and talking about my feelings or doing that internal work is not anywhere on the list of deliverables. So give me that checklist, give me that action plan with the SMART goals, and let's keep it moving. And we have to really get folks to buy into the notion of processing our feelings and getting in touch with our bodies and figuring out the intersection between our emotions, our trauma, our emotional capacity is crucial to the day-to-day work. You can't do this work if you're, on a razor's edge. You're about to lose it every 2 seconds, right? You cannot do this work that way.
Well, the work is getting done, but we can't do it efficiently. effectively
Or effectively,
or
that's right.
meaningfully with being on autopilot and just pushing through.
That's right.
Wow. So this is a very exciting conversation. And even as you were talking about that, the reactions are kind of the same reactions that we had to the racial equity work. Right? I got into this work to do domestic violence. I got in this work to do social change. I didn't get in this work to do racial equity. So, yeah. So it's the same kind of like layers of the onion that we're asking people to peel back.
And I think, at least from my perspective, Cassie, jump in, but I think it's that initial resistance to what has been taught to us to be out of the norm. Right? And if we've been taught as a society that our emotions have no place in the workplace, in the quote unquote professional space, then there's an initial resistance to exploring that in order to just achieve our missions more effectively. I don't know what you're thinking, Cassie.
Yeah, and that's the norm that we're working against here, right? The idea that we need to drop all of our emotions, identities, anything we're dealing with at home, at the door, or at the top of the Zoom room, right? And that's not what is going to create a culture of belonging, a culture of vulnerability, a culture of connection, which we know can positively impact teams in terms of retention, in terms of creativity, et cetera.
And I also have to think that, so many of us who come to the work because of our quote unquote traumas, because of the things that we've experienced. And maybe there's if we haven't come to terms with the fact that we deserve to be heard, we deserve to have feelings. Now here y'all are coming in saying, feel your feelings. And this might be the first time they've heard that in a long time.
Yeah, and I think one important thing to note, especially in terms of working with organizations, working with teams, something we talk about with our clients is the importance of leadership modeling the vulnerability and modeling tapping into our emotions so that others can feel comfortable to do so as well, right? Someone who is in a program coordinator role, a role that is working directly with the community. Doesn't have, the positional power within the organization, might not feel comfortable opening up and being vulnerable about the emotions that they might be experiencing. So it requires leadership to do that internal work and to model it for other staff for them to be able to feel comfortable to show up in that way.
Yeah, 100%. So before we get into the heart of the article, I just wanted to know, Fiona, did you want to say anything else to sort of bookend this part of the conversation?
Yeah, the only other thing that I would add is being vulnerable. And by vulnerable, we do not mean disclosing your deepest, darkest secrets in the workplace, right? By vulnerable, we mean being transparent around, hey, this is challenging for me, and I'm on this journey. Or saying, hey, I made a misstep here, I caused harm. I take accountability for that. I'm sincerely apologetic, and I am learning, and I'm committed to continuing to grow and evolve and explore the emotions that underpinned my reaction, right? That's what we're talking about. And when leadership models that vulnerability, it is not a weakness. I often find that many of the organizations and leadership and emerging leaders perceive this transparency and vulnerability as a weakness, as opposed to it being another crucial element of leadership. Right? So that's the only thing I would add to that.
Yeah, and thank you for adding that because it's making me think about the excerpt that we read in the beginning, too. A wildness, an openness, an expansion that is necessary for us to like be real in the world is what I'm hearing with
Absolutely.
the work that y'all are doing. So your article starts off with this powerful line. In this turbulent time, we need to prepare ourselves to meet the future that's on the other side of this dystopian nightmare. So, can you unpack what you mean by that? Like, what is this future that we're preparing for? And then the second part of the conversation is, what does emotional preparation look like in real time?
Oh, great question, Zoe. Yeah, so think what I when I started writing this article, I was thinking about again this polycrisis that we're experiencing in this moment. And I think for a while now, it's felt, at least from my perspective, that we are building up to something right now. There's a lot of harm that's happening within the current political climate that we're experiencing. And people want something to change. We saw this in the most recent round of elections, yeah. And I think what I'm talking about in terms of the future that's on the other side of this dystopian nightmare that we're in the midst of, I'm talking about an environment, a society, a culture that feels more liberatory, where people are not living in fear. And we don't get there by continuing to go about business as usual and doing tactics that we've tried in the past and expecting different outcomes. We need to be practicing new ways of being. And in some ways, I think we've seen some glimpses of that with Zoran Mamdani. And that's kind of in the big scale, but even when we're talking about on a small scale, how can we incorporate more liberatory practices within our small teams, within our departments, within our organizations, within our neighborhood, our community? I think that's what I was getting to, in terms of how we meet ourselves on the other side of this nightmare. Fiona, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, thank you. We are at a point in time when a lot of presumptions are being torn down, institutions are being torn down, ways of being are being torn down. And so, as we move forward through this time, some people are saying, let's get back to fill in the blank. And what we are saying is, let's reimagine. Let's reimagine what's possible, what we can achieve without the confines of what currently is or what was. And I think that's important to unpack our emotions and do that emotional preparation so that our reimaginings are rooted in fertile land. Right? Instead of toxicity, instead of pain, instead of hatred, instead of exclusion, that we are rooting, grounding that reimagining space in collaboration, in belonging, in interdependence, and shared growth. And so for me, that's what the sort of emotional preparation is necessary for, and what the future hopefully entails.
And so it sounds like what both of you are talking about is this wholeness, this building something that needs us to be whole. Is that what y'all are talking about? Like these are the very specific, these very specific things that you said. This is a part of being like a whole person and having whole movements.
Yes, exactly. I think in terms of that emotional preparation to meet our future selves on the other side of this nightmare, it requires us to start small, right? In everyday moments, right? Tapping into what we're feeling as opposed to reaching for our phones and scrolling and kind of numbing away what we're experiencing, seeing all of the crises that we're experiencing in 2025. It requires us at family dinners to say more than today was fine or yeah, it was a good day. Having deeper conversations about what feelings came up during the day, or starting our check-in meetings with our teams with, you know, what's been sitting on your heart lately, or genuinely checking in to see how folks are doing, not expecting that people are going to leave what they're experiencing at the door.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so why do you think our dominant? Oh, go ahead, Fiona.
I'm sorry. So I just wanted to add one quick thing about wholeness and recognizing that we want to bring our whole selves into community and spaces with others. We have to recognize that it's not all, you know, sugar and cream and everything nice, right? You know, sometimes we're bringing pain into the space, and then it behooves each and every one of us to be introspective enough to understand when and how pain is showing up for us, right? So if we are creating new systems, new ways of being, new norms, we have to recognize whether or not our pain is detrimentally impacting what it is that we're creating. So I can bring my whole self to the space, right? And I have to recognize that part of my whole self might harm this space. So how am I going to do that? What supports do I need from the group to help me not heal, because that's a independent journey that we all go through, right? But to support, to foster, right? And so that whole self that I bring to the space, regardless of whether or not I am currently experiencing trauma or pain, will still help that space flourish.
And also, I think distinguishing between experiencing pain and being triggered by previous traumas as opposed to experiencing discomfort. I think that nowadays it is so easy for us to be experiencing discomfort and to shut down, to leave conversations, to cancel people, to leave relationships. When in reality, sometimes moving through those discomforts, those moments of discomforts, are learning moments, collaborative learning moments. We can learn things about ourselves. We can learn things about the other people that we might be in tension or conflict with. And so, yeah, I think something that's been on my mind recently related to what you just shared, Fiona, is like, again, how do we distinguish between I'm experiencing hurt or harm or pain versus I'm uncomfortable because we're trying something new?
Why do y'all think our dominant culture supports this numbing out? And do you think it's a new phenomenon, or you think this is just feels more present because we're adults now living through it?
I don't think it's new. I think that the current system works the way it was intended to work, and it has simply evolved with the times. I think that division that has been so intentionally cultivated over time rears its ugly head in new ways. And now it's division because we are separated by screens, division because we're separated by identity, division because we are separated by region, division because we are separated by our attention span or our education level or our class or the neighborhoods we live in or our immigration status. I think that, it just has taken on a different iteration in 2025, but I think it is the modern day reflection of what has, I think, always been at the since the foundation of this country, unfortunately.
I agree. I think being out of touch with our emotions or numbing our emotions, or encouraging us to feel only certain emotions is a tool of white supremacy culture. And I think capitalism, in some ways, in recent years has kind of fueled and sped up or made it easier for us to numb out, right? Because of our access to technology, our access to social media. It's just happening faster now, I think, because we can just open our phones and scroll through some TikTok videos and forget about the feelings that we had prior to watching four or five clips.
Can I just jump on that really quick, Cassie?
Yeah.
So, Zoe, I think we talked about this very briefly a couple of years ago. As a society, we haven't collectively unpacked the pandemic.
Oh, you know, I was already thinking that.
So we have a whole bunch of folks, right,
Yes.
running around with trauma, grief, pain, loss,
Come
fear.
on.
And nobody has unpacked this mess.
No. Yes. Everybody just went back to work. Yeah.
Yes,
Put that
we
banana
did
bread
not
down and get
sleep.
back to work.
Yes. Yes.
Not banana bread. It was, wasn't it like a, what was the bread? The bread.
Sourdough.
Hard dough bread.
Sourdough. Stop making that sourdough.
Sourdough.
Get back to work. I know. I
Right?
know. Yeah.
So, we've been told that our emotions don't matter. And if we don't have, culturally accessible means of unpacking all that we experienced, because it's not affordable, or it's not in our language, or it's not in our community, or it's not in a model that is comfortable to us and our community, then how are we expected to build something rooted in healing and emotional processing when there is a significant underlayer of 5 years, 4 years lost?
Come on.
So.
And I believe that that is one of the reasons why everything is breaking down, because after the Spanish flu happened, there was a war. And so it's interesting. Again, we should have been having global grief rituals, in my opinion. We went through something that was so terrifying. And it's like literally, okay, back to normal, start shopping again. And I firmly believe that's why things are part of the reason why
Yeah.
things are like cracking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we didn't complete that stress cycle.
All the stress. Talk about the stress cycle. I feel like we talked about the stress cycle when we had this conversation.
Yeah. I mean, we experienced this insane level of stress during the pandemic. We were told to continue, in some ways, continue business as usual, depending on the work that we were in. And we didn't have a collective opportunity to release and let go and come back to stasis, right? And I'd argue that between 2020 and now, it's just been one thing after another on, added on top of that, that we haven't unpacked.
Right. And there's been, and no completion, no unpacking and no
Exactly.
completion. Maybe in like small circles like ours, but like not in a big collective. And also, there
Yes.
were people that were denying it while we were going through it.
Yes.
Well, then there was also that piece as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think at times I feel like there are individuals, pockets of people who are denying the fact that to this day, in November of 2025, people are still experiencing impacts of COVID, long
Yes.
COVID, and yeah, the impacts of what they have experienced in being infected.
And so what do you all think about? So you talked about like not grabbing the phone, right? As one way of interrupting this numbness. Are there any other things that come to mind, especially for people who are in the systems, who are surviving inside the systems that we're trying to change?
Yeah, I think tapping into our emotions and normalizing what it sounds like, what it feels like to bring our emotions into space is a muscle that we have to build because it's not something that we are used to, right? We have been taught to drop the emotions at the door. And so it's something that we have to practice in all of our spaces, within our friendships. Right, diving deeper than the just how are you, but no, actually, how are you doing? Right, within our organizations, our team meetings, creating space for rage, joy, grief, whatever we might be experiencing, to not ignore that those that we're interacting with in the spaces that we occupy, aren't also feeling lots of feelings about what we're going through in 2025.
I think some additional pieces in addition to everything Cassie said, as well as, just putting down your phone, getting in touch with our bodies, right? Like that tension you have in your shoulders and in your back, that stomach ache, that those clenched fists, that cortisol racing through your body. Why is your body experiencing that? And then unpacking the feelings that are stimulating those bodily manifestations, exploring that, just getting in touch with our bodies. So that's one piece, like just reconnect. The other piece is, being, introspective in a way that's accessible to us. So not everybody likes to journal, right? But you can be introspective in taking videos, right? And capturing nature. What are the thoughts that are coming up for you as you're going through a field and taking pictures or videos of that? You can be introspective, and tap into your emotional processing while drawing, while coloring in a coloring book, in a meditation book. You can be introspective and tap into your feelings while doing, visioning practices and things like that, right? Like, so we are not here to tell folks there is one thing that you need to do, put that phone down, and that's it, right? Cassie put in the, article in the blog post, maybe sending a voice memo to yourself or friends about what's coming up for you. Maybe that's the way you get in touch with your feelings. I just had a conversation with my son last night, and he's, instead of journaling right now, he's in a season of writing letters, old-fashioned paper and envelopes. And he starts the letter out to, and it's blank, and from, and it's blank. And it is about what he's experienced during the day, the thoughts that are coming up for him, his fears, his hopes, his concerns, his aspirations in terms of both, socially, but also for him independently. And so there are a variety of different means of doing the work that, Cassie is uplifting in this article.
So going back to the article, you said that this isn't some far-off dream. We can practice the future right now in our households, in our organizations, workplaces, and neighborhoods. So what might you say to somebody who's doing the work, but they feel frozen? Or they're frozen or they're afraid to feel. What would you say?
That's a great question, Zoe. I would think there's a lot of different approaches, and I'll be curious to hear what your thoughts are on this, Fiona. But I think if someone's experiencing a moment of freeze, I'd be curious for them to unpack what's at the root of that freezing. What's the emotion that's underneath that? And maybe being able to approach that in a way that allows for them to explore it through joy and creativity. Right. So maybe it is a moment of collaging what you're afraid of, or what is coming up, what is the motion underneath that freezing? Whether that be physically collaging with magazines and paper, or maybe you open Canva and you do it, online. I think in those moments, being able to approach something with a little bit of joy and creativity can allow for us to open up. We're in a moment of experiencing a lot of fear right now. And so those triggers of fight, flight, fawn, or freeze, I think, are very common. And so I think to counterbalance that, bringing some joy and creativity could potentially be helpful.
Thanks, Cassie. One thing that I would suggest to folks who feel like they're experiencing a freeze in doing this work is reassessing how they define freeze, right? Many times we envision quote unquote success as something big, a huge shift, a change, a definitive change before and after. And sometimes, like a glacial melt, the change is, well, not today, but the change used to be really slow and incremental, but it was there. Right? And so maybe by reframing what we determine to be change or an outcome, or that desired goal, that we can say, ah, I'm not actually frozen. That this growth may or this path may not be at the rate I would ideally desire, but it is shifting. It is advancing. So that's what I would lift up.
We started this conversation talking about leaders and them really modeling the way that this, they re that they, it really does have to come from the top in so many ways. Is there a way for leaders to do this work without centering themselves in the work?
I love that question, Zoe. And I think that brings up a really important piece that I want to connect back to what we were just saying. I think, yes, it is so crucial for leaders and people in power to be able to model tapping into their emotions. But honoring feelings that we're experiencing is not the same as emotional dumping. So it shouldn't look like an executive director of an organization venting about everything that they're experiencing, right? It could look like an executive director naming, hey, I want to explain why I have been a little quiet. Here's what I am processing right now. Here's what I know about our current situation, and here's what I can share with you. I can't share everything, but here's what I can share. And being very mindful, right? Examining the power and privilege that they have in that position of power to be able to share in that way, but not veering into, again, that space of emotionally dumping. And that requires, the leader to then be able to open the door for feedback, right? Okay, I just named where I'm at and experiencing this, and I want to hear y'all's feedback. Where are you at? How are you feeling in this current moment with what I just shared? What would you say, Fiona?
I think that what comes up for me as you all were discussing that is authenticity and authentic empathy and connection. If I am, really committed to empathetically connecting with others, it cannot be all about me as a leader. Because then that connection is a connection of one. It's just about me. But if I am sincerely committed to trying to uplift, support, advance, and work collaboratively with others, I can authentically show up and also create real space for those I'm in community with and working with. So that's what came to mind as y'all were talking.
It makes me think about at least the domestic violence field. There used to be, and maybe it's still happening, like things for executive directors, leadership retreats, and things like that. And it would seem to me that if that's still happening, that there would be some place for this kind of conversation that you all are forwarding in those sort of arenas, and then to help them sort of deal with the things that they're dealing with so that they can show up whole in the organization.
Those spaces are still happening, and also I think that that is a whole nother podcast about, like, who is in leadership, right? And there's tension there about, I'm really open to this and doing the work differently, and I've been doing this work this way for X number of decades, and you're never going to change my mind. So that's a whole nother
That's a whole
conversation.
other
You
conversation.
get us again in
That's next
2026
year.
on
Yeah,
that.
that's next year. That's next year. So, as we start to, end this part of the conversation until we meet again next year. I have a lot of organizers that listen, a lot of healers and educators. So do you all have three first steps that folks could just small steps that people could do to start integrating feeling into their practice of equity if they're not doing it already?
I think one step that I would suggest for folks to start practicing to build the muscle is to set aside time to tune into what's coming up in your body and the feelings that are coming up before you grab your phone, before you jump straight into work and use productivity to numb away whatever you're feeling. Maybe open up a feelings wheel. Check in with what's going on with you before diving in. I'd also suggest, like Fiona mentioned, tapping into where you might be feeling those feelings in your body. That's data for us for future times. If I notice when I am feeling angry, I can feel a lump in my throat. I can use that as data for the next time. When I'm feeling a lump in my throat, I know I need to take a pause. Fiona, what about you?
Yeah, I would add on to that, the pause component. My suggestion, if you're starting on this journey, is if someone gives you challenging feedback or challenges how you've shown up in space. Maybe you've done something or said something that was harmful to others or unintentionally excluded others or chipped away at a culture and space of belonging. To concentrate on responding instead of reacting. The knee-jerk reaction might be a space of harm or defensiveness or being scared. And in all likelihood, won't end in something productive. So, just focusing before I open my mouth, is what's going to come out of my mouth going to be a response or is it going to be a reaction? And that's something very simple we can all do.
Absolutely. This has been such a great conversation. And I would love to know what's going on with Healing Equity United now. What are y'all up to?
Yes, we have a really exciting conference that we are working towards in the new year. We are going to be facilitating a healing conference called Rooted and Rising, a virtual gathering for healing, connection, and collective action. And it'll be happening on Thursday, February 5th, 2026, from 9 a.m. Pacific to 2 p.m. Pacific. And this is open to anyone. And it's centering the wisdom, resilience, and lived experiences of folks in the space, while inviting everyone to practice shared healing, solidarity, and collaboratively figuring out some next steps.
Okay, that sounds exciting. And so, how can folks support your work besides obviously coming to the conference? Are you all on social media? How can folks find you? How can folks support you?
Yes, you can find out more about our scope of work at healingequityunited.com. And we are on LinkedIn. You can find us at Healing Equity United and Instagram at Healing Equity United as well.
Great. Thank you both so much again. And so, I mean, so many gems dropped today. And listeners, you have concrete plans now, concrete steps that were given, ways to deepen your conversations. And so, if this conversation today stirred something in you, if you found yourself crying, nodding, or breathing just a little deeper, as always, I want to hear from you. So, you know, you can reach out to me at info@iamzoeflowers.com. And tell me what part of you is waking up to feeling again, right? Your story belongs here. So, this is our last episode of the year. And it's been a very interesting year talking about feeling for me. And as Fiona and Cassie remind us, preparing for the future isn't about escape, it's about embodiment, it's about daring to be human and systems designed to keep us numb. And so I will see you all next year back for more conversations like this every Tuesday, 7:11 Eastern Standard Time, with bonus episodes on Friday or whenever I feel like dropping them. And you can listen to the podcast anywhere where podcasts are available. So until then, take care of your tenderness. And remember, no one deserves to stand on the brink alone. I'm Zoe Flowers, and I will talk to you soon. Bye.